Glenn Beck to me is right on, Daddy-O. Glenn Beck is a result of my success.
Hillary Clinton.
Nurse Ratched.
Bill Clinton.
When I hear Bill Clinton's name, I can't help. I start channeling the guy, and I can't have, look at. Do you realize how quick and shafty I am, Jamie? Look at what I managed to pull. The Democrat Party is going to be really, really sad when I'm gone, because I'm the glue holding them together. I mean, I'm wealthy. I sold a lot of books. I tell people I'm rich all the time, how my tax rate is, and I still scored $2 million for that stimulus plan that was supposed to create jobs. How clever am I?
You're bad.
It's all true. It's a great comedy. Has to have an element of truth in it. Barack Hussein Obama.
Chances of that White House invitation, not likely. But President Obama has been good for Rush. His ratings are soaring.
The more Obama makes himself known to the public, the more the public rejects what he is selling.
And personally, he says he's never been happier. He's lost 85 pounds and talks freely about his past struggle with addiction to prescription painkillers.
Do you struggle with any of it anymore?
With the opiates,
yeah.
The painkillers?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I haven't had a craving, which is odd, they say, but I haven't had no struggles with it at all.
What did you learn from rehab?
You know, I actually thank God for my addiction, because I learned more about myself in rehab than I would have ever learned otherwise. There was a time where I desperately cared what people thought of me. Desperately. Not professionally. I always somehow knew that that didn't matter. But personally, when you're worried about what people think of you, you stop being who you are. And you start tailoring yourself to everybody else so that they like you.
You don't worry what people think about you.
Oh, I'd be insane if I did. I don't even give people the power to offend me.
Oh.
I'm not. You cannot offend me.
Wow, I'm so impressed with this album by Ndombe, am I saying it right? It's called L.I.E., Long Island. Again, L.I.E., listen up.
Talking with D-Beck and the most of it. He's making real money on the day. Selling hot everything on paper. They buy it quick, yes, they buy it fast. And at the close of a day, he takes the L.I.E. back to his life with his wife and kids. They are living the American dream. Ooh. Long Island Expressway, came to a place he could eat. Over the bridge to live with Peter Pan. Where he wants to be. Long Island Expressway. If it's good for you, then it's good for me. All the way to Never Never Land. Guess that's where he wants to be. He puts the kids to bed and makes love to his wife. By midnight, he's sweating bad. The money's waiting in Switzerland. So's the woman in the south of France. Tossing and turning till his wife is scorning him. He tries to keep the worry down, down, down. But then
I'm sorry, I had to do this again from the top. I was not up on Ndombe. If you all were up on it, give me a late pass. This album is very impressive. Maybe the best underrated album since Teedra Moses in 04.
Talking with D-Beck and the most of it. He's making real money on the day. Selling hot everything on paper. They buy it quick, yes, they buy it fast.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
He takes the L.I.E. back to his life with his wife and kids. They are living the American dream. Ooh, Long Island Expressway. left us where he wants to be. He puts the kids to bed and makes love to his wife. By midnight he's sweating bad, 'cause all the money's waiting in Switzerland. So the woman in the south of France.
You are listening to the Ebony Man, Mr. Cedric Mahomet, on the Black Coffee Show.
He tries to keep the worry down, 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 but the note found on the front lawn tells him his secret is out. Ooh.
You are listening to the Ebony Man, Mr. Cedric Mahomet, on the Black Coffee Show.
I mean what I say, this album from top to bottom is hot. It's called What It Takes. There's one song on here that got massive cursing. I don't know which one it is, though.
Rest your weary, aching head. Lay those burdens down. They'll be here when morning rolls around. Baby, it's not always an easy fix. It's not the end of the world. I am here, I'm still your girl.
So don't change that URL. The hip hop the norm, Cedric Mahomet will be right back.
Break, know that we've got it. We've got what it takes. Know that we've got it.
Pink Elephant, man. I mean, am I late coming to the knowledge of Ndombe? I'm so ignorant, I'm not even probably pronouncing it right. Pink Elephant. Anyone got this? And I'm not a big neo soul dude, but this is the truth. With an F.
Baby, it won't be like this for always. Let's weather the storm and head for brighter days.
Some of us like to laugh. Some of us like to cry, and some of us like to be challenged, but we all want to be stimulated, baby. That's why we're listening to Cedric Mahomet and the Black Coffee Radio Program.
Give you a little background on her. Sister Ndombe. I think she's from Dallas, Texas. All my Texas representatives, are you familiar with her? From the Dallas Morning News. Soul singer Ndombe finds musical inspiration everywhere. This is October 6th. Says Erykah Badu isn't the only soul diva putting Dallas on the map. singer Ndambi, who grew up hereabouts and has collaborated with Badu in the past, garnered acclaim for three of her own well-received albums in the past decade. The fourth, Pink Elephant, is out and is her first on the historic Memphis R&B label Stax Records. Relationship problems fuel some of the tunes, or do they? Believe that. While other songs show off her knack for creating stories and characters. A lot of times songs come out of nowhere, she says. I feel like it's some sort of divine intervention, the thing I'm supposed to write. Here's from a phone chat with Ndambi, who lives part-time in Los Angeles. So they ask her, oh, by the way, this song is called Nobody Jones. The Dallas Morning News asks, do you start with lyrics when writing, or do you need a groove first? She says, I've done every approach to writing. I will start with the bass line and try to work a melody around it. Sometimes a trick is, how do you get a melody to move when a bass line is prominent? I'm driven by bass lines and drums first, but there's also the approach of writing lyrics first. I'll have a story but no melody, and I have to figure out how to make that work. Then I'll sometimes have the melody first and try to think of what goes with it. Oh, Glenn from Philly got his books, y'all. Glenn from Philly has all three books, The Entrepreneurial Secret, three-volume book series. Glenn from Philly officially has it. He got his from Barnes & Noble. Dallas Morning News. Question, how did you come up with L.I.E. and Nobody Jones? And Ndambi says, when you spell out Long Island Expressway, it's a lie. I knew there was something I could do with that. So it became a story about a man who works in Manhattan and is a salesman. And he's selling these lies every day and people buy them. Damn, that's heavy. Nobody Jones was one of those songs. I passed a boutique with that name. And I thought, what if that was a girl's name and she was named that on purpose because she didn't have a good environment to grow up in and her light was taken from her from the start. This song is called Ooh Baby. Damn, this album is high. Is it just me?
Cedric Muhammad transforms into DJ C Nice. Only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee program.
That we used to play back when we were spending time. Have your feelings changed? Does your heart still keep my place? Back in your arms is where I want to be. I must admit that I was wrong to leave.
Give you some more. Shit, I had a couple pieces. I covered a lot of ground, man. I want to hit you with this Oppenheimer interview. Let's see if I got that joint ready to go. I don't want you all fading out because the music is so melodic, smoothing you out. Man, get this album, man. Ndambi. Let me give you some more of the interview. Says you call Dallas and LA your hometowns. How are the two different for you? She says one of the differences with LA is that when you're in LA, you can be on 24/7, go, go, go. But you also have the advantage of slowing it down. In Dallas, when I'm at home, I'm not working in the same capacity. I do some work just by watching people. But really, I'm wriggling my toes on the porch swing and watching the world go by.
Back in your arms is where I wanna be. I'm woman enough to tell you I was wrong to leave.
All right, let me continue with the knowledge, wisdom, and understanding.
Baby, make me more.
Is it Nicky Oppenheimer on GPS? Let's go.
He and his family are 98th on Forbes' list of the world's billionaires. His family business had almost $6 billion in sales last year. That family business owns the phrase, "A diamond is forever," which Advertising Age called the best slogan of the entire 20th century. That family business, if you haven't already figured it out, is De Beers. The chances are good that De Beers had a role in putting that diamond on your wife or your sister or your mother's ring finger. The company still produces and sells close to one half of the world's supply of rough diamonds. In 1945, the United States Department of Justice filed an antitrust suit against De Beers. Almost 60 years later, in 2004, the company pled guilty to price fixing, paid a fine, and paved the way for De Beers and its officers to re-enter the United States. So here on U.S. soil to talk about all of this, Nicky Oppenheimer. Thank you for being here.
No, it's a great pleasure and really nice to be in America, because as you rightly say, the executives for De Beers weren't able to come to America for a very long time, and we certainly missed out. So it's really nice to be able to be here.
Did you feel that the suit was unjust, was improperly handled?
No, it was, as you say, it started a very, very long time ago. And at a time when De Beers certainly produced and marketed the substantial portion of diamonds produced in the world, that's changed over time. And the world has changed, and De Beers has changed. So it's right and appropriate that we should have put this behind us and now be able to come here, because America, the United States, is half the diamond retail market. So it's absolutely vital we're able to come and visit here and be here and to be judged by people here.
Now, some people still say, though, that you operate as a cartel in the sense that when there are surplus diamonds out there, you swoop in and buy them. There's stories about whether it's Israel or Russia. Talk about that.
Well, it's a nice thought, and maybe life would be easier if it were true, but it's certainly not. What one's seeing at the moment is that everything shows that the demand for diamonds is most probably outstripping supply. And so as a diamond producer, we want to produce as many diamonds as possible, and there's no question of putting them in a safe anywhere.
One of the things that people say, though, about these things you dig up out of the earth is that they screw up the economies of the country that you get them out of. If you look at countries around the world that have oil or other kinds of natural resources, very often the economies get perverted, the politics gets perverted. Harvard historian Neil Ferguson calls this the resource curse, as have many others. You operate in all these countries. Do you feel that there is a link between these natural resources and bad governance?
No, actually, I don't. And I don't like the word the resource curse, because it sort of implies that the countries would have been better off without natural resources, and that must be patently untrue. Whether they've been used properly by the people involved, by man, is quite another story.
But a lot of people don't know the background of what goes on with diamonds. So you see a movie like Blood Diamond, and let's say it's, you know, somewhat dramatized and such, but there has been a connection with a lot of violence, civil wars, predatory practices by states, because there was this easy route to money for the governments, for the militias, for the gangs involved.
Actually, I went and saw the movie. I rather liked it. I thought it was a good adventure story. And there certainly were diamonds, particularly in somewhere like Sierra Leone and Angola too, which were used to partially fund civil war. But they were always a very small portion of the diamonds produced in the world. At their greatest moment, 4% maybe, 5% at the very most. And what was, I thought, really good was the reaction of the diamond industry to this threat to people's emotional attachment to the diamond. And the outcome was the Kimberley process, a process of getting certificates on to travel with rough diamonds. And that means that when you buy a diamond in the retail on the high street, you can be certain that that diamond hasn't funded conflict. And diamonds have done good. I mean, there are, as you say, Sierra Leone, Angola, bad examples. Botswana, an unbelievable example of what diamonds have done for a country. There was a country which, when I was young, its only export was people who came to work in South Africa. Then diamonds were discovered. Now there are roads, universities. The country's developing and growing. There's a burgeoning middle class. And that's been built on diamonds by people who used their natural resource properly.
But that's a fascinating example, partly because it is unusual. It's somewhat exceptional. And you've done a lot of business with Botswana. What is it about Botswana that made its leadership, and it's now had four presidents, I think, in a row who are honest, interested in development. Is it a fluke? Is there something that one can learn as a lesson for the rest of Africa?
I think it is a lesson for the rest of Africa. I once sat at a conference with President Mackay from Botswana, and somebody asked him exactly the question, why is Botswana honest? Why is there little corruption there? And he said, you know, when the country became independent in the 60s, it was extraordinarily poor. So there was no point in being corrupt. There was nothing to steal. And then they got in the habit of being honest. And then they found diamonds, and the habit remains. Elsewhere, I think you are seeing tremendous progress in Africa. Botswana is not the only example of African countries which are growing and which are becoming more transparent and more democratic.
De Beers is a vast company, operates all over the world. What has it been like operating in all these different countries, different economic, political levels? You've had to deal with Russia, China. Where do you see, are you as excited about Asia as many people are?
Yeah, no, absolutely. China and India are the very exciting places. And what's encouraging for us in the diamond business, people really want to own diamonds. Now, China and India, I think, will be tremendously important in the future. From De Beers' point of view at the moment, still off a fairly small base.
And as the world turns and as these countries like India and China have new middle classes and upper middle classes, you expect that you will be able to sell them the dream of a diamond is forever all over again.
I think that they show a tremendous desire to own a diamond. And we say it's a dream, but it obviously does something deeply important to people's psyche, as you rightly say. It maybe makes no difference in a material sense, but in the emotional well-being, when you give your wife, your girlfriend, or friend a gift of a diamond, the reaction is extraordinary, and that's a special business.
Cedric Muhammad, Black Coffee Program, CedricMuhammad.com, BlackElectorate.com. Mike Tyson on Oprah. Did you all catch this? I got two clips here. Mike Tyson on Oprah. It's some heavy stuff. Listen up.
Buddy, if they don't have that extreme addict personality, you can never understand how a guy can blow $300 or $400 million. It's if I have to live at the top of the world, I also have to live at the bottom of the ocean. It's not, I don't know how to live in the middle of the life.
Are you learning how to live in the middle?
Oh, no. I'm working on it, you know.
Working on it.
I don't know. You know, it's funny you say it because I don't know, just I guess it's relatively, yeah, because it's relative because I think I have nothing. And maybe that's my denial in how I function in the world. That I have nothing, so I'm functioning good. And it helps me.
You think you have nothing compared to 300 million?
Yeah, that as well. But my priorities change so much that oh man, I don't know what to do if I did have a lot of money. It's just totally changed from being Mr. Las Vegas to just having, we're going to work on this job, we're in this journey together, and we're going to raise these seven kids, and that's what we're going to do.
So Kiki, knowing this man has this tormented past, you know, with other women, as he just admitted, you're the first person he's been monogamous with in all of these years, and, you know, the volatility with money and all of the issues that he talks about in the documentary, Tyson. Why did you say I do?
I don't care about any of that. It's all about the way he treats me. And I've never had that experience with him. Mike has always, I mean, I've known him since I was 15 years old. I've always loved him. He's been nothing but...
Yeah, but you know that side exists.
Well, so they say, but I don't... I know that there is a side. Yeah.
The baby's in such denial.
I'm very protective. Yeah, but I don't see that. I see like the lighthearted, the silly side, maybe because I'm silly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just.
But when you watch this documentary.
I've never watched it through its entirety.
And why haven't you watched it in its entirety?
I just don't want to watch it.
You don't?
I don't know.
Is it because you want to be in denial about that part of himself?
No, there's no denial. I know that those are things that, you know, he's experienced, but, you know, we have a different experience, and it's not, we live in the present.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing to me.
Mm-hmm. We'll be right back.
He He's a great father.
No, I'm being real.
No, I am. I'm being real. You have a good relationship with all your children. They text them all the time. They call them. It's been a real blessing. You know, we have a really great family.
Well, Milan likes them. She never sleeps. She doesn't sleep. I sleep 2 hours a day. But it's like hanging out with her.
Love you.
He does silly faces and stuff, too. Things he doesn't want people to see. He dances with her. They're really bonding.
My daughter. I'm just happy being happy, you know. I got 5 or 6 people who I need to tell me that I'm number one in their life. And if I don't feel loved by them, I'd have a real bad day.
Let's bring the baby out. Where's the baby? Yeah. The baby with your mother, the baby with
your mommy.
How old is she?
Hi, she's 9 months. She's a Christmas baby.
She's a Christmas baby.
Yeah.
How do you feel about your new life now, Mike?
It's a new process in my life, and I know it's an inside job. And about us being honest with one another, I know from my experience, and if you have somebody that you love, I don't care how much you love them, if you can't be honest with them, it's not going to work.
Not going to work.
Not going to work.
Not going to work.
If she don't know your secret, they're going to haunt you. You can't love her.
Can't love her. Well, thank you so much for being so open and revealing and showing ourselves to us, really. That's what this does. It shows yourself to you.
I had a gentleman who I used to purchase drugs from, and he tried...
What was your drug of choice?
Everything. But he tried to make through an intervention on me.
Uh-huh.
You know? Yeah.
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 Didn't work.
No.
Yeah. I'd be scared to have an intervention with you.
Yeah.
It didn't work. Didn't work. Because an intervention means you have to be surrounded by enough people whom you love and trust. And it didn't seem like you had enough people whom you loved and trusted.
No.
Yeah. Who would you say that you now love?
I love all my babies.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that really matters to me now, you know? I'm glad that I'm married and I have a wife that could go through life with me and understand that this is my priority in life. You know, I have to take care of these babies now.
Uh-huh.
You know, we get pretty few, you know, we're fortunate to get a few luxuries, but this is my main priority.
So you just had a baby?
Yeah.
Right. Who's 9 months old?
She's pretty awesome.
Pretty girl.
She's pretty awesome.
If we're lucky and have time, look at her. Look at her. Look at her. And there's your beautiful wife sitting in the front row. Mike got married in June. Mike got married in June.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, to Kiki. So we'll talk to Kiki a little later on. But we also understand that you had, in a previous relationship, a young daughter, Exodus, who passed away through some bizarre accident. Can you tell us exactly what happened?
Mom, listen, oh, man. This is my angel right there. I don't know what happened. I don't want to, you know, I went about this, I started off to go about this in the wrong direction. I started to go, just go in this place and start blasting. But once I got there, I think more of my experiences in rehab and all this, it just kicked in, boom.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about being responsible.
Mm-hmm.
What had to be done, she had to be buried, she had to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have no animosity. I didn't have no anger towards anybody. I felt I had the right to, I don't know. I just, I don't want to say the wrong thing because I know.
Mm-hmm.
I thought,
but we heard it was a freak accident that she
Well,
somehow.
That's what I heard too.
Had twisted the cord.
I don't know.
You don't know. You still
don't. No, I don't want to know. I don't.
You don't want to know.
No, I don't want to. Because if I know, then I'm gonna put somebody. Somebody's gonna be a blame for it.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody's to blame for it, it's gonna be a problem.
You don't want to carry that.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. How has her death affected or changed you? I heard you just say she's a little angel. I actually do believe that when you love...
Oprah, please shut up.